720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth tonight in for Patty Vasquez. She is off being fabulous in Los Angeles like she often does. I'm here with you till 2 a.m. Thanks for being with us tonight. Taking your calls and text messages as ever, 312-981-7200. Love hearing from you when it's kind and thoughtful and all of those good things. We have so much to get to this evening. We're going to be talking with Sister Alicia Torres. She is the nun from Chicago who just won Chopped. We're going to be talking with her in just a little while, which is very exciting. That's something on my bucket list for sure. I would love to win Chopped. I could do it, unless it was super weird. But we're going to talk to her about all that. We're going to get into all kinds of good stuff. Hi, Esmeralda Leon. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What's new and exciting up there?
Traffic.
Well, so that tree coming in, I didn't realize it was this early.
Yeah, well, you know, they got to get it in here.
I guess.
Yeah, it's November 24th, I believe, is when they actually do the lighting. So, I mean, think about putting all the lights and stuff on that tree.
I don't want that job. because you know that you get all those lights on there and then there's one bulb and then you got to check them all to figure out which was the burned out bulb. No.
It's a big tree.
No. How big is that tree?
I want to say 63 feet.
Big enough.
63 foot tall.
Big enough that a whole lot of lights on it will drive you crazy.
Exactly.
Good times. So, my friends, I would like to talk about something that was kind of weird that happened to me today. And that was this. I have a neighbor who got in my face a little bit, not in an aggressive way, but needed my help because she was badly injured. And she had cut her hand very severely today. And the first words out of my mouth, Craig and Esmeralda, I'm not a bad person.
Oh, this is the best.
But this is the first words out of my mouth was, did you kill your husband?
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know why people were confused. Yes.
Not, are you okay? She was
Profusely bleeding.
Mm-hmm. I took her shock at sight of her own blood as panic, I've just done something wrong. And so that's the first thing out of my mouth. Did you kill your husband? Not, are you okay? Can I help you? I'm not a bad person.
No, you've got a question you have to investigate first, because if the answer to that first question was yes, you
I'm
don't
not touching anything.
Her. Right.
I'm not
that's
touching
true.
A thing.
Evidence right. tampering.
Exactly.
I don't want my prints on all the whatever
then
in there.
Then you just kindly close your door and ignore the rest of
yeah,
the knocking.
I'm going to go. Yeah. No. So that was the thing that happened. Here's the thing. I don't, despite quite a bit of first aid training, I don't do that well with blood either. So it really creeped me out. But it turned out to be kind of one of those, like, dumb injuries that...
Yeah. That she just cut herself.
She was, like, cutting a pineapple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which there's a whole procedure to that, I found out today during our production meeting.
Right. Because I was describing the proper way to cut a pineapple.
Right. As was Stephanie Menendez, actually. You both seem to be pineapple cutting experts.
You buy one of them things and then you just shove it in.
I've seen...
Right.
Yes. See, I don't like
That's what
the...
you do.
Overheard. See, I don't like the unitasker stuff.
I know, but for a pineapple, it just seems like such a pain.
You chop off the crown, you chop off the little butt end, so then it can sit flat, and you just carve those things off the sides.
Yeah, but then you gotta touch it, and it's all pokey. I'll just buy a container.
Pre-cut ones, right?
Pre-cut pineapple.
Yeah.
The only problem with cutting your own pineapple is you do get that little, like the little specks of stuff left on there. Because, you know, the little crannies with the pineapple skin. That's not good. Only the highest intellectual topics here.
Amen. Pineapple cutting.
Pineapple.
Hand cutting. And well, then, by the way, in that meeting, which kind of made me sad, the topic of injuries came up, so Stephanie asked me to show everyone my wounds from my abdominal surgery.
Which so that, he did.
I you
did
didn't do it already?
That. Esmeralda, he like whips up his shirt, and I was like, guys, that's the seventh stab wound I've seen today.
were you like little kids, like, check out my scar?
Look at all
he kind of was.
Well, because I had a laparoscopic procedure, which
but you're not even at
is a
scar
word I understand.
Status yeah. yet.
No,
you
I'm
still
not.
Have
it's
like
still,
open
still
wounds
bloody,
happening.
Yeah, right.
I feel like if one of those little butterfly things would have been taken off, like all of
I would just spill out.
Yes.
My whole insides.
Oof.
Yeah.
See.
Thank you.
I don't like it. But then that led to a conversation about regrettable injuries. And I have one that was so stupid and I reacted so poorly. I kind of need to act it out, really. But like I had a serrated knife and I was cutting a cake in half. You know, you put your hand on the top of the cake and then you cut it sideways so you can put like the jam filling in there. And I was doing that and I went to wipe the knife but the knife slipped, and so the serrade went against my hand holding the towel. It was gross. But
And then what did you do?
Well, I turned around to tell the other person in the room and immediately passed out. I was like...
I like that part.
I was working at a bakery at the time, mm-hmm. and I was like, hey, my coworker, my colleague's name was Fernando. I was like, hey, Fernando, boom.
This happened.
This is a thing. Right. Boom. And I was done.
Wait a minute. You were working at a bakery? Are you a cook of some kind?
I'm a pastry chef.
What?
My dad was in the hospitality industry. That's a little known fact of Amy Guth. It's one of the last sentences of my bio on my website. my dad was in the hospitality industry, and I worked in every station of the kitchen except for the grill. That was just too hot, and I get crabby when I'm too warm.
You know, is it the same for chefs? Like when Patty tells people that she's a comedian, they immediately ask her to be funny?
Be funny.
When you tell someone that you're a chef, do they immediately ask you to go cook things? Like, can you go make me stuff?
You know, that's never happened until just recently. I was speaking at a college, and someone in the very front row said she saw that in my bio, and she asked me about it. And she said, "Are you really a chef?" And I said, "Oh, I am. I've kind of kept that up. I still am on paper or whatever." And she goes, "Make us something." And I was like, "Why? I'm
do it right now. You have these ingredients. Go.
I've got a notebook and a purse. What would you like me to make for you? I don't know what to tell you." But yeah, no, that's a thing that when I was doing that for a living, I didn't cook at home much or didn't want to because, you've cooked all day. It's not fun. But then once someone started paying me to write and, be on the air and all that stuff, then I, cut down on those hours doing that and did less of it. And once I stopped doing that kind of work, then it was fun again. So now I kind of, just like baking stuff and having dinner parties and junk like that. But one day I'm going to be on Chopped and it's going to be awesome and I'm totally going to win. And we're going to talk with Sister.
Yeah, I think we have somebody who has an in for you.
She's got an in.
Yeah.
I'm going to get this.
Work this out.
We're going to work the nun and she's going to help me get on Chopped. It's going to be good.
My favorite sentence of the night so far. We're going to work the nun.
Really? I don't know because I really liked what Esmeralda said earlier about the pokey things. Pineapples. It's getting ridiculous already and it's only 11:17. But on that note, we got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're talking about waitressing, the waiter world, serving, on all the things that can go wrong with it, like tipping and all, not tipping and all those things. So I want to hear your stories. Get them ready for me. Got it? Okay, back in just a bit. 720 WGN.
It's the first annual Twitter-a-thon with Amy Guth. Pull out your phone and tweet right now at Amy Guth. Tweet, tweet, Twitter, Twitter, tweet, tweet. Do it with your hands or your feet. Yeah!
La, la, yeah! La, 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 la. That's right. By the way, Amy, I don't know if you remember this. Patty Vasquez last week when you were on with us said that we would do a tweet-a-thon.
I know, and I showed her by just hosting the whole show.
For your Kickstarter campaign.
And so you guys made a theme song and everything?
We did. That's the theme song by Jason Skaggs, the amazing Jason Skaggs.
An excellent.
You're going to hear a lot of that tonight, listeners.
I'm sorry, did he say you can do it, you can do it with your hands, you can do it with your feet?
Yep, he did. Those are the amazing lyrics we have in this evening. But it's a tweet-a-thon, which means that if you donate to Amy Guth's Kickstarter campaign, and Amy, what's the exact way to find that again? Can you just search your name on Kickstarter?
Well, what I would do is, I would go to Kickstarter.com and just search Amy Guth, last name mm-hmm. G-U-T-H.
Mm-hmm.
I know lots of people like to write me letters here addressed to Amy Guth, like the creature.
That is not correct.
That ain't it.
No, no.
It's like Ruth, but with a G, G-U-T-H. Go there and search my name, and you'll find it. It's
and
there.
And if you do that tonight during this Twitter-a-thon, which will last from right now till the end of the show, and then tweet at us that you've made a donation, we will verify that for anyone that wants to lie to us.
I can look it up.
Yeah, you can check, right. But if you do that, you'll be entered to win a prize, and we'll give away several prizes tonight. Lou Malnati's gift cards. We're going to give away stuff.
Holy moly, please, you guys were really going to blow it up for me.
Yeah.
That's awful
for
nice.
For sure. It's the tweet-a-thon. The pretty late tweet-a-thon for Amy Guth, hosted by Amy Guth.
That's not weird at all.
Not weird at all.
Well, so what it's for is that I'm doing a documentary about women and online harassment, which is a big deal. I personally think that it's a public health issue because it is really hurting a lot of people. And we think of it sometimes as like teens and bullying on social media. It's gone way beyond that. We're seeing, women diagnosed with PTSD and like it's really getting out of hand. And even just on a minor note, like snark is sort of the default language of the interwebs, and even that really sucks. So it's a documentary that's going to tackle all that, and I'm going to do it in episodes. I'm going to have a lot of episodes, couple seasons of it, hopefully more. And that's what I'm doing the Kickstarter for. But the thing with Kickstarter is that it's like all or nothing. So you raise it all or you raise nothing. So I'm really close, and it's counting me down in hours, which is a little scary. Right now I have 63 hours left and to hit my goal, but I'm really close to it. I basically need to raise $2,500 more and I hit my goal. So
yeah, actually you're close to 45.6 now.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So $2,400.
Come on, guys.
Let's do this. Okay, so the rules that you have laid out, how does this go?
Right, since it's a tweet-a-thon. We could do it as a call-a-thon, I guess. If you want to call in and say that you donated, I'll take your name and stuff on the phone number. So 312-981-7200. But, you know, to embrace the social media, tweet at us, Facebook us that you've made a donation, and we will enter your name based on that into the drawing, and we'll announce a couple winners tonight or maybe on another show.
Of all of this awesome Luminati stuff.
Luminati's gift cards, man. $25 gift cards to Luminati's.
Who basically, I'm buying you dinner.
Yeah.
Or not I.
Right.
But, you know.
No, you're kind of buying people dinner.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that's fun. Let's do this. Help me, I'll help you. Good times. Well, gosh, I don't even know what to say, but a theme song. That's pretty awesome. I guess. It's oh, there's the more of it. Annual Twitter-a-thon with Amy Goo. Yeah. Don't let your phone
and tweet right now at Amy Goo. Tweet, tweet. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
That song right there is going to make an appearance on my show Saturday
awesome.
Night as often as possible. I'm just going to have people tweet about anything just so I have a reason to play that. Tweet about the weather today. It's a tweet-a-thon about the weather. That's what I'll do. Well, you heard the man. If you would like to back the Kickstarter, the perks start at $5. For $5, I'll give you a shout-out on social media. $10, an origami crane. I'll make it for you myself. Lots of cool stuff. So if you do that, you tweet at us or call him. We'll put you in that drawing for that Luminati stuff. It'll be good. Well, thanks, Craig. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. We're going to do it. I don't care that.
Having a song written for
right.
me.
I'm sure that Patty would want this to happen. So we're doing
she
it
would.
In honor of
it's
that.
What, yeah. It's right. what Patty would want.
It's what Patty would want.
Lordy. Well, you know what? I had no idea we were about to talk about that. So I'm kind of thrown off my game here.
Yeah, I apologize. I completely threw you the wrong direction.
No, it's all
we
good.
We had something else on the rundown.
I was going to talk about this thing that's kind of going viral. This... a waitress posted, basically she got stiffed on the bill because this woman, her customer, thought, who was a newlywed, and they walked in and said, oh, we're newlyweds. And she said, oh, me too, but I guess they didn't catch that part. The woman left her a really snide comment instead of a tip. It just said something like, he's my husband, find your own, good luck, instead of a tip, which is so rude. And here's the thing, I've waited tables. You're not making a livable wage per hour. So if you don't get that tip, you're in trouble, and you have to claim it, like 10%. I mean,
well,
you have to.
And we've talked about this before in the show. I think you mentioned that you were a waitress, and we've mm-hmm. had callers call in. It's not even always their fault if those main problems come up, like if the food is late or something. It's usually not the server's fault. So unless the server
has done something,
has
don't
done
punish
something
them.
Awful to you, you really should still tip them.
Oh, yeah. So my favorite that I used to get, like if someone would say... this was the classic one. You know, I said I wanted this well done and it's not well done enough. There goes your tip. Okay, I didn't cook it. And I also didn't cut your food to verify the temperature. In
right.
fact, I usually would bring it and say, you want to cut that and see if the temperature's all right.
Right.
And that particular time, this guy was like, it's not. There goes your tip. Okay, again, I didn't cook it.
Right. It makes no sense depending on what the thing is that makes you mad. And like you said, a lot of restaurants, almost all the restaurants in the United States, pay people like $2-3 an hour because a lot of the money is supposed to come from tips.
Honestly, I think most servers that I know have forgotten they have a paycheck because you don't live off that. Your check might be $14. It really will not be much. And so you don't depend on that. You depend on those cash tips that you get day in and day out. So when
yeah, and by the way, what's crazy about this story too is that apparently she is also a newlywed, the server who got stiffed.
And her husband
works there.
Works there in the very next section. So this woman, the server goes to Facebook and writes this post to the woman. Like it's a PSA from all servers explaining these things to her and breaking down the situation. And she finally deleted the post about like 2-ish, but it had been shared over 50,000 times. That's a ton. That's amazing. I can't imagine the feeling of, I wonder if anyone shared my post. And then you look in there and you're like, oh, man, 50,000 people have. Oh, boy. Yeah. So that's a thing. Well, I wish her well. And I hope someone gives her a tip to make up for it, which is something that also happens. Sometimes people will realize you're getting stiffed and the other table will be like, you know what? those people were terrible. I'm going to tip you extra, which is what I hope happens for her. Anyway, my friends, we're taking a quick break. We're going to get you to news and all that good stuff. Back in just a bit. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez on 720 WGN. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez this fine evening. Thanks for being with us. We're taking your calls and text messages, 312-981-7200. Always like to hear thoughtful comments and questions from you. Always appreciate them. My friends, you know that wonderful network that is the Food Network that is so great, and you can just binge watch it for hours and hours and hours and just feel like you've cooked a lot, even though you haven't done anything, but maybe like eating a bowl of cereal while you're watching it. Right. They have so many good shows on there. But recently, Chicago had a very special moment on one of those shows. And that show is something that's kind of secretly on my bucket list, although not so secretly now. That show is Chopped. And so we are joined. We have the honor of being joined by Sister Alicia Torres, who just became the Chopped champion, which is very exciting. Hi, Sister Alicia. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me on, Amy.
Thank you so much for being with us. I'm so excited to have you on the phone. I would love to hear about how this came about, of how you even the path to getting on to Chopped.
Sure. You know, we heard that Chopped was casting for religious sisters. And so I love cooking, and I asked Father Bob, who's our superior here, if I could try and apply, and he said, why don't you go for it? And so I submitted an application like any Chopped potential contestant chef would, and they called me up for an interview, and I went through the interview process, and now the rest is history.
There you go. Well, and so what was this like? What was the experience like as you got on the set and all of that? It looks so very tense on television. Is it really that tense?
You know, for me, it was an incredibly positive experience, a lot of fun. There was certainly a high level of competition going on, but I think because myself and all the other chefs work for soup kitchens and help to serve those who don't have a lot of resources, there was just such a collegiality among us, although it was still a competition, so that made it special.
Those are my favorite episodes, when people are really there for a great cause, and sometimes that's a personal cause. People say, I want to win the $10,000 to help my relative or my kids or whatever, but I really, really love the charity episodes, too, where you know everybody wins at the end because everybody's playing for such a good cause. And tell us a bit about the cause that you were playing for.
Sure. So I'm a sister at the Mission of Our Lady of the Angels in West Humboldt Park here in Chicago. And so we serve a beautiful community out here. Every month we help to get food to about 700 families a month. And we also work in conjunction with the YMCA of Metro Chicago and the Greater Chicago Food Depository to run Kelly Hall, where we serve about 900 youth a month. So we have a weekly food pantry and then meal programs Monday through Friday for the children, a senior program, community dinners, all sorts of things that we have out here to help get food to our neighbors.
That's such a wonderful cause, and I have heard, and I'm sure you know so much more about this than I do, being so close to the cause, but I have heard that this time of year is when a lot of food banks and soup kitchens get a lot of support, and then as soon as the holidays are over, it's really difficult to get people in there. Is that accurate?
Yeah, you know, everybody, it's awesome because in America there's such a sense of generosity, especially around Thanksgiving and Christmas, these months of the year. But as you know, and I know, we're hungry every day of the year. And so to help raise awareness that we still have hunger in America, but if we work together, we can certainly make a huge difference in ending hunger person by person, neighborhood by neighborhood.
That's excellent. What a wonderful mission. That's so perfect for Chopped. And so as you were, as you won and $10,000, right, that you won for your charity? So, and that will, I'm sure, do so much good. And so what do you hope comes from all this? Because suddenly there's quite a big light on you and the charity.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I mean, my hope really, I'm a religious sister, so my faith is really important. And I just really hope that it will help people recognize, that to be connected with God is a tremendous blessing. And there's a power in that because I really believe that my energy and my strength comes from my relationship with God. So that's something that's awesome that I really want to share no matter where people are at with what they believe. And then also, every person can do something to make a difference in our country to help end hunger. Some of us have a lot of talent, others have treasure, others have time. And so how can we look at the gifts that we have and think about how we can share those with others in need?
That's a wonderful, wonderful attitude there. And I love in the Chicago Tribune story, I loved how you were talking about how you believe the kitchen is your canvas where you get mm-hmm. to express yourself creatively. That's so. Were you always cooking so much, or something you kind of discovered you had a talent for later?
You know, when I was in middle school, it was probably when I started spending time in the kitchen. I would bake homemade breads and help make pizza and homemade cakes. And then as I got on through high school into college, you know, dorm food is good, but it, you know what I mean? So I used to make homemade meals for friends and our on-campus apartments and cheesecakes. And so when I got to the point in my life where I felt this call to be a sister and I finally said yes, I stopped fighting with God and I entered my community, I just happened to be the one with the most cooking experience. And so over time, I've taken on, you know, helping with being the lead cook here and also helping to oversee the food that comes in to get it out to the neighborhood and make sure that we're good stewards of all of the wonderful gifts that people give us.
Mm-hmm. So on this particular episode, because everybody was competing for such a wonderful cause, did that change the spirit of competition any?
You know, I think that what it did was it helped us to see one another not as, like, there wasn't any sort of enemy factor there or, like, oh, I really want to beat this person. I mean, every round when someone got chopped, I think we were all really sad because we didn't mm-hmm. want them to leave. But ultimately, somebody had to win the competition. And I was just so really honored by the Food Network and how each of the competing chefs received a donation for their charity. And there was such great exposure to the problem of hunger in our country, but also how individuals and organizations and just average people really are coming together to help meet the needs of hungry people.
That's so wonderful. Was there, I know the theme was Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. Thanksgiving type of foods, which was so perfect considering the theme. You know, Thanksgiving, I feel like is the one holiday we have left that is kind of unspoiled by material, even though retail shops are now opening on Thanksgiving. But it seems like it's such a simple and nice holiday that's really about, you know, people and food and coming together. Was there an ingredient in that basket? Because, you know, everybody, we watch Chopped and we see these crazy things come out of that basket. Was there anything that came out and you thought, oh, I just don't know what to do with this?
You know what, Chansey, I was just pretty... The dessert round basket was really challenging. I mean, I looked and I opened the basket and I just felt totally disgusted because I'm lactose intolerant, so to see this giant turkey cake was totally revolting. But I was like, okay, I just got to like take a step back here and just let myself be composed. I'm going to do something with this. And so thankfully, I was able to put it together into a dessert that tasted good and looked good, and ultimately that helped to steal the competition.
You did it. It's very exciting. I'm so thrilled to see Chicago represented and certainly for such a wonderful cause. So congratulations to you and to your organization. We're all so excited for you and so very thrilled. And thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Oh, thank you too, Amy. God bless you.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Good night.
Well, there you go. She was a lovely person, and how exciting that she did that for such a great cause. And indeed, hunger is such a big issue in every city, and how wonderful. So if you are interested in supporting her organization, I encourage you to do so. We'll tweet out a link to it later so you can check that out and you can connect with her organization and support it and all those good things. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are taking quite a turn, topic-wise, quite a turn. So stick around for that. We'll be back in just a bit. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. My friends, we were just talking with such a lovely person. We were talking with the good sister who just won the show Chopped. And it is not lost on me that our next topic is quite the opposite of talking with a nun.
We did not keep the nun for the next topic.
We intentionally said goodnight to her. She was so nice. She said,
so
God
lovely.
Bless you at the end. She had such a sweet voice. I kind of want to be BFFs with that nun.
Me too.
She was so nice.
She
I loved
nice
her.
She was when I was telling her thank you for being on the show. She was like, oh, it was no problem. Aww. Thank you so much. You guys
she
are great.
She was so sweet. I'm so happy she won. She was so, I mean, anybody that's doing something for charity is so awesome.
Right. So anyway.
But as I was saying, we're about to take a hard right turn away from that topic and talk about something else. And that is, there is a private club coming to the neighborhood here, just right by Tribune Tower, River North. It is, it's not a country club. No. It's an adult club. It's earmuffs.
What kind of adult club, Amy?
Well, I'm worried that perhaps our new nun friend is maybe still listening. If she is,
yeah, don't.
Earmuffs. Earmuffs,
seriously,
please, sister.
Please.
Earmuffs. So, anyway, well, it's a BDSM club. Whoa, sound
Warning.
Effect.
Warning! We are entering adult topics here.
Go ahead, Amy. You were saying?
Well, that's a thing that you do on the show.
It
I
is,
need more
yeah.
sound effects on my show on Saturday nights.
You really do.
Lordy, I had no idea. So there's a BDSM club that already exists in Chicago, and it's looking to move to a space in River North, and some residents are not so happy about that, and they don't really like the idea of, like, bondage and leather and stuff like that running around the neighborhood. So here's the thing. One local resident was talking to DNA Info, and she said that there, quote, isn't any person in the neighborhood in any neighborhood across the country who would want a sex or BDSM themed club sharing a street in their home. Okay, I don't know about that, because these clubs do exist. So somebody on some street is just fine with that. So then I don't know about that. But here's also the thing. I feel like the freak flag can fly in any neighborhood and does. Like that. Come on.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it does. And if they're not getting a regular establishment to do this sort of thing, people in River North who are interested in this are still doing it. They're not.
Okay, stopping. My thought is this. If you are this angry about this coming into your neighborhood, because if it's a private club and it's like behind closed doors, look, my thing is, as long as you are doing things with consent of all parties involved, do whatever you need to do. Like, what ifs? As long as everyone is of age.
Yeah, and, you do you.
And you do you.
Right.
You let your freak flag fly in
whatever
the way that you want to fly it, and whatever makes you happy and makes you feel good, do your thing.
Way to go, Amy. That's a good attitude.
Whatever
I think.
You need to
yeah.
do. Right. If that's like a leather bunny suit, that is your business
hey,
and not mine. Whatever.
No one's judging.
Right? But I feel like one reason one might be angry about such a club being in their neighborhood is if, say, you don't want to be seen walking out of it. You know?
Right. You don't want the neighbors to see that this is something that you're into.
Right. Because, like, say you... Because currently it's on the west side, this club.
Mm-hmm.
Say you are a member there but live in River North. And suddenly it's moving next door to you. You're like, I've never heard of it.
This is crazy.
Right. And then the owner is walking out.
Now?
Hey, what's up? Shut up. I've never seen you. I don't know. That's the thing.
I don't know any of these people.
I thought there was another kind of interesting thing in the story about this on Chicagoist. So the building where this is going into... The owner of the building also told DNA Info, she's like, I don't have a problem with it. It's a private club. I don't care. But then she said kind of a weird thing that I felt like it was a bit insulting to those of us in this country. And that was, I'm not American, so this means nothing to me. She is calling us Puritans.
Yeah.
That's totally what she's doing.
It was a completely inappropriate shot at America.
Yeah.
I'm not American, so this means this doesn't matter.
Esmeralda, what do you think?
We were founded by pilgrims.
Nice comeback, Ez.
That had a lot of problems with you know.
Speaking of Puritans.
Yeah.
With
right.
stuff.
Right.
Well, okay, so let's say this is your neighborhood. How would you feel about this club going into your neighborhood?
Are they going to make a lot of noise?
I don't know.
Like, is there going to be loud music and
yeah, but do you live, like,
weird drunk people
above
hanging
them?
Around?
It can't be louder than any. Have you seen some of the clubs in River North?
But that's what I mean. Like, if that's not going to happen, then hey, come on in.
I can't imagine it being louder than, like, Boss Bar, which is a scene of crazy at 2 o'clock in the morning when people are running towards it. So I can't imagine. Or, like, Paris Club, that club upstairs that's loud and thumpy.
Right.
With all the crazy lights.
That would be my only issue.
Yeah.
The noise. They can do whatever they want in there, as long as they're quiet.
You're having a dinner party, your whips or something.
Amy, I can tell you're the kind of person that goes to a lot of clubs because you just described one as loud and thumpy. You know that one that's loud and thumpy?
Well, I say that because they usually have the windows open and people are screaming down onto Hubbard Street as I'm walking home through all the crazy. Hence why I live tweet my walk home with hashtag GoothGauntlet, because there's just so much to behold. It is a feast for the senses of bad decisions is what it is. Here's the thing. If it's a private club, I don't know that anyone would necessarily know it's there, because it's not like you'd be like, okay, well, here's my leather lederhosen. And my ball gag, I'm going to walk over to this thing. You would wear something and then probably, like, I like to think you wouldn't, like, show
right.
up wearing your leather.
Right, you wouldn't. Yeah, you'd
There's
wear
There's probably
something
a
else.
Locker room or something, right?
Hopefully. It's interesting because this story also says that when they applied for the permit, someone noticed what the permit was for, and that's how this uproar was created. What person is following all these permits to be like, nope, I'm not okay with this one? The rest
nosy
are fine.
Nellies.
Yeah, every neighborhood's got that person that has nothing to do but scrutinize details and you know.
I wonder what businesses have applied for permits today. Oh my God, no. It's amazing.
I don't see the big deal.
Right.
I don't. It
no, there's nothing
Again,
wrong with this.
As long as everybody is a consenting adult, mm-hmm. do whatever you want to do. Whatever.
All clubs are approved by Amy Guth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
I mean, I have stronger feelings about some of the loud, thumpy nightclubs than I do about a BDSM club. I mean,
I get mad at the Starbucks where too many people are out on the street and I'm trying to walk by. That's more.
I got other issues with Starbucks, and that is everyone freaking out over the red cups.
Oh, no. This is incredible, right? It's insane.
So if you have been following the story, it is basically that the holiday cup has come up now, and it's like a little red Starbucks cup with the little logo on it. But there is a pastor that has accused Starbucks of hating Jesus, and I think the word Satan was thrown out.
Was there a baby Jesus on the Star Cups before? Or on
there
the
was.
Starbucks cups?
There was. There was a beautiful baby Jesus.
Well, I mean, the Dunkin' Donuts cup has like a wreath, and it says joy.
Right.
But this is what we do every time. This time of year, everyone says there's a war on Christmas. Last year, you'd think that I set the building on fire because this time last year, I said on the air, hey, you know what? If you don't know what someone celebrates, just say happy holidays, because you don't know if someone's celebrating like Hanukkah or Ramadan. You'd think I set Tribune Tower on fire. Seriously, we were inundated with calls of people calling me horrible names, starting with communist, but ending with things I cannot say on the air, that I was like, I'm just saying, like, this is America, and everybody is welcome here, and lots of people celebrate lots of different things.
Right. I celebrate Christmas, but I've never been defensive of Christmas to the point where I had to make everyone else celebrate it. If you celebrate something else, that's okay.
And here's the thing, by including other people, you're not negating your own thing.
If you
feel strongly in your observances and mm-hmm. your religion, then nothing should crumble that foundation. Nothing should be threatening to you at all. And so by virtue of here we have like the wonderful sister that we were just talking to who's doing good things and saying, hey, some people in our city don't get to eat every night. And then we have this guy saying there's a war in Christmas and Starbucks hates Jesus and everyone should boycott that if they care about Christmas. What? Worry about other things. I just don't get that. That's way too complicated for me. Maybe that pastor needs a little dose of reality. Maybe that's just a little far-fetched. But if you disagree with me, let's talk about it in a thoughtful way. 312-981-7200. We're going to take a little break, get you the news, all that good stuff coming up in just a bit. 720 WGN.
It's the first annual Twitter-a-thon with Amy Guth. Pull out your phone and tweet right now at Amy Guth. Tweet, Twitter. Twitter, tweet, do it with your hands or your feet, yeah!
I see that song has resurfaced, Craig.
We're still doing the Twitter-a-thon. This is 3 hours, the entire show.
So the plan was that you and Patty were going to get me in here in the first segment.
Correct.
And then just make me stay the whole show.
Correct. I think we were just going to continue to do the tweet-a-thon, and we were going to ask all of our listeners who donate to your Kickstarter campaign to tweet us, letting us know that they donated, and then we're giving away prizes.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, since we've been here and you have been playing that awesome song that you created for me, which I don't even know where to start with how awesome that is.
You're welcome.
Some people have backed me on Kickstarter and backed the project that I'm doing about women and online harassment, but
right.
no one has tweeted that they have done so.
Okay.
So I have no idea if they're just randomly backing the project or if they are
Got
doing
it.
So as a result of our prompting.
Yeah,
so
please.
They should call you or text.
Let us know. Text us.
Text 312-981-7200. Let Craig know mm-hmm. that that's you and that you heard it here so we can put you in the drawing for a Luminati's gift card.
A $25 Luminati's gift card. So if you donate $25, you might get all of it back in a gift card, just so you know, people.
See?
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing that's happening.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Well, I super appreciate that song because it is awesome. Ah, goodness. All right. Again, the awesome Twitter song has thrown me off my game and I forget what the heck I was about to talk about. But I remember because we have our good friend Rex Hupke on the phone. He is the unofficial political correspondent of my show, which is on Saturday evenings. Hi there, Rex Hupke. How the heck are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I love that song.
Wasn't that awesome? I was surprised by that at the top of the show. I had
it's
there it is.
First annual Twitter-a-thon.
I really like the line about tweet something tweet and then do it with your hands or do it with your feet. I like that. What, you know, so few things rhyme with tweet. What are you going to do? That's cleaner for the air anyway. Ah, good times. Well, hello. Nice to talk with you, Rex Hupke. How's it going?
It's going great. Happy to be here.
Well, so as the unofficial political correspondent of the Amy Guth Show, we have to get an update from you about the GOP debate that was this evening, because Twitter was, speaking of Twitter, on fire during that time with lots of people having lots of opinions. But I'm interested to hear your take of how it went.
It was interesting. there were many different things to take away from it. My personal favorite part, I think, was Marco Rubio saying that we need fewer philosophers and more welders. So I helped him with a new campaign slogan of welding our way to a better tomorrow.
What does
Rubio
that,
2016.
What does that even mean exactly? What was the context that he was trying to get at?
There seemed to be kind of, and this came through in a couple of places actually tonight, where it almost seemed like a, you know, anti education. That's not fair, I guess. You know, basically saying, you know, we need people who can do jobs, just get out there and make money, basically, and have jobs. But it was sort of discouraging people from getting, a college education, in a sense. I mean, that's what he really, which was kind of an odd approach, I think, especially in our economy. And also, I saw fairly quickly people pulled the numbers on welders versus philosophy majors. And first of all, there are already far more welders than there are philosophy majors. People with a philosophy degree make considerably more money than the welders do. So I don't really know, if you're looking for career advice, if that's exactly the way to go. And that's not to say anything against welders whatsoever. But,
or,
you know,
philosophy majors.
Yeah, or philosophy, right, or any of them. Now, I imagine out there somewhere there is a welder philosopher who has had a very big night tonight. He's finally been recognized.
Right. There's that PhD in philosophy who's making a living as a welder, who's like, finally, it's my day.
Yes, exactly. That was kind of odd. I mean, I kind of get what – I mean, I think the point there is that you want more people just getting jobs and working and stuff. But I just, again, that flies in the face of where our economy is heading and what people really need to succeed in the long run anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what to take from that. The other big thing was Donald Trump talking about his plans to deport people who are undocumented people who are in the country, and sending a big shout out to Eisenhower's deportation plan, which he used a while back, which was actually called, it had a, what is now considered a slur for Mexican people, mm-hmm. in the name of the actual plan when it was in place. And it's considered one of the more kind of horrifying parts of our history, where they rounded up and deported a huge number of people under rather terrible conditions. And Trump spoke about it as though it was the greatest thing that's ever happened. And so it was a very weird thing, too. I don't know how familiar he was with what he was talking about, but it was the kind of thing where you could just see the people in Hillary Clinton's campaign room jumping up and down and shouting in glee as the Latino vote went even more towards her side. So anyway, it was weird. I mean, there were some good substantive parts of it, and I thought that you had Jeb Bush and John Kasich especially sounding very reasonable, which is the death knell for both of them, I imagine. But, they spoke much more compassionately when it came to immigration, and much more reasonable when it came to dealing with certain parts of the economy and financial issues and that sort of thing. But reason and compassion will only get you so far in this race, I think.
Right. Not in the American political system. We will have none of that reason and compassion business. Nope.
Yes, absolutely not.
Well, so I'm curious about Carson a bit, because it seems like he's had he's been in the hot seat a lot in the last couple of weeks.
Yes. And he, you know, this is one of those things where it's pretty amazing to me, the media world that we live in. And I blame this a lot on, I mean, I think we've become people are only receiving what they want to hear now, more than
ever.
On
both sides.
Right, on both sides, exactly. And that explains, I think, MSNBC and Fox News. Mm-hmm. You kind of have, you know, sort of your left and right news spigots that you can go to if you want to. And then online, of course, you can just sort of tailor what you consume to you know, whatever you feel is true. And so, you know, there were legitimate questions brought up about Ben Carson's background this past week. And he's not a politician, which is something he really touts as one of his better attributes. So he doesn't really have anything to for people to examine in terms of his qualifications. And he's made his life story a very central part of his campaign. So you know, looking at that life story and the veracity of it is a perfectly reasonable and important thing to do. And so, you know, the immediate cry was, oh, it's the liberal media. But then you have the Wall Street Journal, mm-hmm. you know, finding inconsistencies and all this kind of stuff. And so through all of that, stuff that I thought would really make people open their eyes and realize that this guy is a very much kind of a fab making stuff up. Just to be perfectly straight.
Yeah.
There's probably a fancier word I could use, but he just, you know, he got asked about it during the debate and just said, well, you know, this is just I you know, how am I supposed to remember something I said 30 years ago or 50 years ago exactly? And, you know, the people don't care about that. They care about issues moving forward. And he just managed to deflect the whole thing, which I found staggering. And I think, you know, if the moderators, if they'd gone a little bit more aggressively after that, maybe they could have pushed him a bit more. But, you know, it almost seemed like he's just managed to turn this thing, blame it on the liberal media, which everybody on the right hates, and you know, off he goes. I think he's going to come out of this relatively unscathed, which is not when it first started happening. I thought the wheels were going to come off the wagon completely, but somehow or another, he seems to have just conned everybody into disregarding this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, again, it's very, these are substantial, you know, either overblown details or completely fabricated details. That really raised, I think, some serious questions about him. But again, people like him, they're just not going to listen. You know, they're going to hear is whatever confirms their own beliefs. And of course, that happens on the left too. It's certainly not just a conservative or Republican thing by any stretch. But with him, yeah, the issues over the past week were virtually meaningless in this debate. And I think offhand, you know, the people that like him, he probably came off very well tonight, despite seeming to not really say anything at all.
Right, right.
You know,
I wonder if he was kind of, I'm sure they all have handlers that kind of coach them through these things. And I'm sure given how, you know, in some cases, rather fantastical some of his headlines were in the last couple of weeks, I'm sure he had someone like, okay, I'm going to need you to play that down. I'm going to need you to say, I do not recall what I said. I need you to reel it in and not be too clear on. I mean, if I were his handler, that's what I would tell him. Like, you know what? Maybe bring that in a notch.
Yeah. No, he definitely. I mean, he puts up this kind of really indignant front about how dare the media ask me questions like this while simultaneously complaining about Obama not being properly vetted. I mean, it's really amazing, mm-hmm. frankly. And Obama was the first president who's ever had to provide a long form birth certificate to prove he was an American.
And even that didn't suffice. That's still, Trump is still a birther and he's still convinced that it's a fraud.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, how dare you not vet him? And then how dare you vet me? It's basically, it just makes no sense at all. It's really confounding. But yeah, I think you're right. They just figured out the right way to handle this, and boy, did they nail it. I mean, I think, you know, I don't think it's handled honestly, but in terms of a political campaign, they handled it brilliantly. So
I think political strategist would be a fascinating job. I think you'd drive yourself crazy and burn out quickly, but I think it'd be really, really interesting. My friends, we're chatting with Rex Hupke. He is a Chicago Tribune columnist, but he's also the official, unofficial political correspondent of the Amy Guth Show. So we had to have him on here on GOP debate night to talk it all out. But we're going to take a quick break and come right back and talk more all about it. We'll be right back in just a bit. 720 WGN. WGN. We gotta let that one play a minute. It's so good. I love that song. It's so fun. You can't help but like dance in your seat when you hear that song. It's a good one. Hey there, it's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez this fine evening. Thanks for being with us. 312-981-7200. We're taking your calls and text messages. Thoughtful, kind, polite, darling comments.
Those ones, yep.
Always appreciated so very much, especially when we're talking politics with our good friend Rex Hupke, who is the official, unofficial political correspondent for the Amy Guth Show on Saturday evenings. But we had to trot him out here tonight because it is GOP debate night. So we, of course, want to hear his take on that and slice it and dice it and think about it and read into it in every possible way, as we do with every debate, because that's what we do. So I know the big things came up, but I feel like the last debate, the moderators were under so much scrutiny for not asking, quote unquote, real questions. And everyone thought they had an agenda. Everyone was super angry. Do we feel like the moderators reacted to that, maybe held back or maybe changed course on purpose?
Yeah, I think they definitely held back. And to some degree, I think it was good. Tonight's debate, I think the questions were good. I don't feel like it's not like they were asking softball questions necessarily. It's just that they were not as, they weren't as quick with the sort of loading up on facts and then, you know, sort of chasing the candidates down when they actually went against some of those facts. I mean, there were a lot of things said in tonight's debate that went unchallenged that were pretty strange, including, you know, a lot about Obamacare and various other things. So,
and part of that was like a time crunch, right? Because they were like 90 seconds for a response and then 60 seconds for rebuttal tonight, correct?
Yeah, and they had this really annoying bell that nobody paid attention to. It was kind of if I felt bad for anyone in the debate, it was the bell. Because nobody, they would be like, ding, you know, and nobody would pay attention. They just keep talking.
Can't get a break as a bell.
Yeah,
I know. So if you had to declare kind of a quote unquote winner of tonight's debate, like, or a star of it, who would you say that was?
Oh boy, I guess, Lord, it was pretty tough. I mean, that was another thing actually that's kind of interesting is that this debate, there weren't a lot of big moments. I didn't think, and that's in part because it was not a very testy debate. I mean, there was not a lot of back and forth. I mean, I'll get to the answer in a second, but the other debates, I think, really, perhaps a little too much, were pitting the candidates against each other, and it seemed they were doing that. It seemed like almost for theatrics, but in this case, it was almost a little too mellow, and so it didn't really give anybody a huge chance to stand out. I think Marco Rubio continued to do well. And I think that, for my money, honestly, John Kasich is the one who makes the most sense. And that is probably not, my view on that is not going to sync with a lot of the Republican primary voters, I don't think. But he just seems very sensible. He seems like he's really approaching things from a, you know, not inhabiting this sort of fantasy land where we can, you know, deport 11 million people and we can, you know, do this, that, and the other thing with taxes without affecting the deficit, and on and on and on. So, you know, and I thought he again had a strong debate performance again, but he's so far down in the polls, I don't know how much that matters. Jeb Bush got in it a little bit more, but he's just, you almost feel sorry for him at this point. He just seems to be getting marginalized. And then
he's got some negative yardage to overcome. I think he's had kind of a, we've seen him fall in polling numbers quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And so I mean, if I had to give it to anybody, it would probably be Rubio, but because everybody else seemed to kind of stay pretty much status quo. I mean, I thought Ben Carson did fine for who he is. And again, I mean, Ben Carson to me does not make any sense at all. I don't think he has. I think he's way out over his skis in most issues, and but people don't seem to care about that. They like him, and so I don't know how much the knowledge base or the actual qualifications matter there, and that's kind of the
same.
Well,
you said, or, you know, when you started, that people on both sides kind of hear what they want, and that's sort of the danger of it. I mean, I recently was talking to someone who said he makes a point to, when he's talking with his children, who are, you know, old enough to understand, he gives them news stories and op-eds and things like that to read, but he takes the name out so they don't know. So they say, I support that one person who said the following things and stands this way on this issue, and not, you know, so they don't kind of get roped in with the theatrics or the personality or, you know, all of those things. We've got to run already. We are already out of time. But in closing, the one question I do have is, how much do you think people missed the people who were not in the debate tonight, that were moved to the 7 o'clock debate?
I think Chris Christie was a real loss, frankly. I think the rest of them can pound sand, frankly. They are not going to go anywhere and aren't really worth listening to in the first place. But Lindsey Graham and Bobby Jindal and those guys, they're just working it for book deals and higher speaking fees. Chris Christie, though, I think, again, he's someone who can be a lot more centrist. I mean, he's got the whole tough guy, loud, obnoxious kind of persona or whatever that he uses. But I think at the last debate, when he was on the main stage, he had a lot of good things to say, and he was a good voice in there. So I would say that he was missed. I think, like I said, the rest of them, you know, Mike Huckabee and whatever. I think Chris Christie should have been on that stage, and he's certainly a whole lot more qualified than a lot of these people, including Ben Carson, for sure, who's really, you know, practically a front runner at this point. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the fifth Republican debate is Tuesday, December 15th in Vegas, and the next Democratic debate is in Des Moines, Iowa on Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
Uh-huh. So we will have to check in with you again soon. Thanks so much for being with us. Unofficial, official political correspondent Rex Hupke. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you. Have a great night.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you to news. We'll be back in just a bit. 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. Thanks for being with us tonight. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can also text us at that number. And, of course, we're keeping an eye on social media all night, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. Feel free to find me there. And as Craig surprised me with that lovely song earlier.
We got the Twitter song of the night.
It's a good one. I'm very touched that song exists. I don't think I've ever had a song written about me, especially not about my Twitter account.
It's the first annual Twitter-a-thon.
That's the one.
With Amy Guth.
Someone wrote that for me.
Look at Esmeralda getting into it this time. She's dancing now.
Yeah,
that's how you would dance, by the way, to that song. You put your hands up.
You need a top hat and a cane.
The Amy Guth Twitter
jazz
dancers.
Hands. Oh my God, if I had backup dancers in my life, it would be... Okay, I've always said I need a gospel choir to echo the things I say when I really need to make a point, and I also need some backup dancers when I also really need, like, jazz hands
in
my life.
You also want a live band following you around with, like, a theme song, like a daily theme song?
Oh my gosh, I would be okay with a DJ. I don't need a band necessarily.
Really? I would want them all on, like, a little mobile cart that they can just wheel around and follow me.
I always just pretend I'm in music videos when I listen to music on my headphones.
Yeah, when you're,
walking down the street.
Walking, working. Yeah, totally.
I'm filming a music video. That's only in my head.
That's a thing. No, everybody does that. That's totally a thing. You know what else is a thing that I find a little bit bizarro? So LinkedIn a couple years ago kind of dreamed up this idea of take your parents to work day, which is a
true
thing.
This is a thing.
This is really a thing.
It is a thing.
So that it's called bring in your parents day. It is a sanctioned work day where you can like bring your parents in to learn about your job. This year, more than 70 businesses opened their doors to moms and dads, up from less than 20 the first year. And, here's the thing with that. I think that's positive in that I think there's a lot of jobs now that parents don't necessarily know how to describe. Right. For example, in my family, my brother is a scientist. And so they say things like, our son, who's my much younger brother, by the way. So in my head, he's still like a little bitty squirt in Spider-Man jammies. They'll say things like, our son is a geologist and predicts earthquakes. Our daughter does something with a microphone and Facebook.
Our daughter talks to people.
I think she talks. I don't know if anyone listens to her.
Oh.
But no, like they don't know kind of what, they just know it involves Facebook because they see me posting about being on the air. Like, hey, tune in tonight. Here's what I have on the show. Mm-hmm. So they just think I post things and then I don't think they know what I do with that.
Our son makes the world a better place by keeping us safe. And our daughter.
She pontificates or something. Yes.
She writes stuff on the internet for people.
Somewhere on the internet, but I don't look at it because I don't know where it is. So that's a thing. So I can get that, like, bringing your parents to work and saying, like, this is what I do and this is how it goes. I mean, I would do that if my parents, they live out of state, but if they lived here, I would be like, come in the studio, hang out, watch me do my thing, try not to criticize me too much while I'm talking.
Be positive the whole time, please.
Right. Don't be, like, thumbs down on that thing you just said.
In the article, too, a bunch of people are taking, like, parent selfies. Like, parent selfies
well,
at work
cute.
Is a thing. Yeah.
I mean, when I visit them, I always take selfies with them.
Right. It could be dangerous. I mean, there are parents out there that are very adamant about their child, very protective of their child, and they might get a little intense in the workplace, I would think.
Well, so, okay. I'm glad you mentioned that because there was a place I used to work a long time ago, and there was a young man that worked there, and his mother called me to negotiate some work stuff on his behalf.
What now? She did what?
So, I mean, I'm not going to say where it is. I've worked in a lot of places and supervised a lot of people
but
at different times.
She called you
so
to negotiate.
I promoted.
For her. Okay.
I gave the guy, you know, like here's some, not really promoted, but like here's some new responsibility you're going to do. And here's the salary adjustment that comes with it. The following morning, his mother called me at work to say, very early, to say, actually, she called me before he was even in to say, you know, that's something that he and I have not gone over negotiation yet. So I'm here to negotiate on his behalf.
How old was this guy?
In his late 20s.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I can't even.
Look, I'm really sorry. My son and I, we haven't covered negotiating salaries yet. So
that's exactly what it sounded like.
Let's
exactly
just pretend that yesterday didn't happen. We'll start fresh, you and I, and
that's
let's figure out. That
literally,
is
that is exactly what happened. And I was like, I can't even confirm that he works here, ma'am. I can't do that. She goes, well, no, I'm his mom. We can talk about this. And I'm like, no, we really can't.
I've written several numbers on pieces of paper. I'm prepared to slide them across to you, Amy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it went. It was very bizarre. And I was like, I'm sorry. I know you mean well. I know you're trying to protect your kid, but he's like almost 30. You've got to let him do this.
Did you call him a good boy at any point?
I don't think I did.
He's a good boy.
I think I said, like, we're all big fans of his, and, you know, I'm happy to see him take on this new stuff.
Did people at work call him, like, sport or junior or anything?
No.
Okay.
No. No. I just thought that was the weirdest thing.
Right.
And I told someone that story, like, much later after I, you know, didn't work there. And another person said, oh, my gosh, that's happened to me, too. And my friend, like, this person that I was telling this story to, she said that in her case, she was hiring somebody and the young woman's father called to negotiate on her behalf.
That is incredible.
So that'll get you a job right away.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it, you know?
That is crazy. First of all, okay, so I would be mortified. I would be so embarrassed that I would probably turn down that job if my dad called and was like, here's the thing. Here's what we're going to do. No, you don't understand. No, don't tell me.
Our little Amy deserves twice as much as what you're offering her.
Oh, my. No, you don't understand radio. What? No. Dad, no. Like, I would be mortified if my dad did that. I would never want to show my face in that industry again, much less that workplace. But that's a thing, I guess. That is a thing that happens because I have read about it happening and I've heard from some friends of mine that it's a thing that has happened just in the, you know, I don't know when that started happening. But
yeah,
that is
I don't
a thing
know if that's part of the LinkedIn story, but apparently from now on, salaries are only negotiated between the employee, the employer, and parents. And would you have parents for both sides? Would the employer have to bring their parents in too?
And what if your parents are, you know, in disagreement about what your salary should be? Then they're fighting over it. It's all bad.
Mom and Dad, I really need you guys to agree. I like this job, please.
Right. Can just this once you guys get along? Stop fighting.
Can we have ice cream when we go home?
Right. Start playing them against each other. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Tell me, what do you think? Would you want your parents to come to work with you? Or if you're a parent, would you want to go to work with your kid? Or would you like just kind of be of the, you know what, do your thing. I'll do mine. We're good. Kind of ilk. I would love to hear about that. 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break and be right back in just a bit. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez this fine evening with you till 2 o'clock. And we turn things over to Nick DeGilio, our good friend. We're taking your calls and text messages, 312-981-7200. And we're talking about this holiday, I'm doing air quotes, holiday that LinkedIn has created that is Take Your Parents to Work. It's called Bring In Your Parents Day, where you bring your parents to work with you to kind of let them know what the work is that you do, because sometimes we can kind of throw our parents for a loop, or they don't know how to describe what we're talking about or stuff like that. So that's what we've been talking about and some of the, say, issues that can arise from doing so. And so right now we have a caller. Hi, Matt. You're on WGN.
Hey, Amy. It's Matt Jones. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Can't complain. These millennials these days, like, bring your parents to work days, seriously, like, I don't know, it's nuts. Like, I work in I'm a tech staffing executive, and I place people out of school all the time, and okay. It's literally like, hey, Matt, my son Jimmy just interviewed for a client of yours, and he's really a good kid, but he couldn't explain himself, and, you know, honestly, like, lay off. Like, what? Like, you're calling me because your son didn't get a job, and then, you know, or your son gets a job and then they last like 3 months and they can't like show up on time, and, you know, or they chew gum and, you know, can't walk. And it's nuts.
At some point you have to stop doing things for your children and let them learn how to sink or swim, you know.
Yeah, and you try to do everything you can, because these kids have like Big Ten degrees and they've gone back to school for masters, and like, and your clients love that, but at the end of the day, it's like you just don't have the people skills because your mom and dad have coddled you your whole life.
Right. So when you deal with parents like that, do you tell them, hey, you need to back off your kid and let them do this on their own?
Yeah, I mean, you try, but. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you have kids or not, but it's really hard. It's really hard conversation. Then they get all defensive, and it's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? My son's perfect. And it's like,
well, no.
Like, it's great. It's great he has a computer science degree from U of I, and he can code and do all this fun stuff. But, you know, if he can't learn to, you know, chew gum and walk at the same time, he's not going to be able to get ahead in life. And I'm sorry that he's living at your house, and, you know, he lives in your basement, and you don't charge him rent, and you do his laundry still, and it's like, what? No.
Maybe that's why. Maybe that's what sparked all this, because it's, you know, that generation that graduated in a time of an economic downturn, a lot of people had to move back in with their parents. So maybe it's the goal really is like, please get my kid out of my house. I'm even willing to call the recruiter myself. Maybe that's where it's coming from.
Yeah, but it's still like to the point where parents these days, like, I mean, they have kids in their house who are like, they're 35 years old.
Yeah.
And yeah, no one's moving out. No one, you know, that life is just like so transitional. Like, they don't care. They'll spend 12 months in a job. I've made 3 career moves. And you're like, well, can you explain that? And you're like, well, not really. I just didn't like my boss. And you're like, well, what does that mean? Like, how do I explain that to my client who's trying to hire you because they want to hire a Big Ten, you know, computer science grad?
That, you know, that is something I've noticed with that age group in particular, that millennial generation, and perhaps just like the younger end of it especially, is the job hopping. Like, there's not I mean, I do think the days of where you go to work at one place and you stay there till you're 65, I do think that's gone. But and I think people are kind of exploring different careers at different points in their life and that kind of thing. But I think it's interesting. I mean, I see a lot of resumes that it's like maybe a year, but sometimes it's like every 6 months we're seeing a job hop, a job hop, a job hop, which.
Yeah. Well, Amy, I mean, no one talks about the contingent workforce these days. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what I do is place consultants in contract jobs. So if I have a client that needs to hire someone for like a software implementation or like a big project, they'll hire a consultant for 6, 12, 18 months. And then once that's done, you know, they just relinquish that talent to go do whatever they want to do. So right now you get these millennials that come out and work for Accenture, Deloitte, or the mid-level consulting firm, and they figure out, like, oh my gosh, this company's charging my hours at like $200 an hour. And then they come to me and they're like, hey, I know my company's charging me at $200 an hour, but I want to make like $100 an hour. And you're like, well, you have like 18 months of experience. Like, how am I going to charge my client? How am I going to pay you $100 an hour, charge my client, you know, $175 an hour, and still, you know, like, save them from the big consulting firm that's charging your hours at $225. But how do I tell my client to hire you at that amount of money and you have 18 months of experience?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, everyone,
some perspective would be good, right? Some perspective of, I mean, I think too, there's a sense of, I mean, when I entered the workforce, it was made very clear to me, like, you need to learn how to eat some dirt, right? You don't need to, you don't need to get killed, but like, you need to do some cruddy jobs and earn your place in the building and work your way up, and nothing's going to be handed to you and no one owes you anything. And if you ask anyone for anything, you better make it worth their while. And I get a lot of like, hey, meet me for coffee. I want to pick your brain. Like, I am so busy. I got no time to have coffee all day long. Like, I think it's admirable, you know, you want to reach out to people doing the jobs you want to do, but I think it's important to kind of like help them help you, really, you know, instead of kind of a sense of people owe me.
And I've been on the third party recruiter side for 12 years of my career. So when I was, you know, 22, 23, telling these kids the same thing, like, they're all my friends, you know, and now it's like, great. I you know, you have a great degree from U of I or Madison or IU, but you're not going to, you've got to go eat crow for 3 years.
Yeah. You got to earn it. You got to earn it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the call, Matt. I really appreciate it. Where can people, I'm sure lots of people are like, I want to talk to that guy. Where can people reach you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. It's Matt Jones. It's linkedin.com/in/MattJones23. And I work for a local, executive search firm called Harmer, and that's Farmer with an H. And then I think you're buddies with John Hudson, aren't you?
Yes, he's a guest on the show all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Huddy and I are good friends. We've known each other for quite a while. We actually live around the block from each other.
I love that Chicago's really just like a big old small town.
It is. It's
awesome.
Crazy, Amy. It's nuts. I mean, I love that guy. We run together. You know, we you know, if you follow him, Huddy's Hotcakes on Instagram.
He's
got two daughters. He works in consulting and, you know, HR guy. But, you know, it's like, you know, but that's the thing. Like, Chicago's so small. Like, it's such a small marketplace. And, you know, honestly, people reach out. Like, I'm happy to help. So
awesome.
I appreciate, you know.
All right. Well, everybody, go find him on LinkedIn and get some good advice. And don't do foolish things when you're looking for a job. Thanks very much for the call, Matt. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
All right. Do the same. Bye-bye.
All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you to news and all that good stuff. We'll be right back in just a bit. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez this lovely evening. Here with you till 2 o'clock when we turn things over to our friend Nick DeGilio. My friends, so we have been talking about lots of topics this evening. We were just talking about how LinkedIn kind of made this holiday. But let's like switch to another social media platform.
Yeah, why not?
For
Let's
a minute. There are so many of them, including some fake ones that we wish existed. What was the one we read about earlier, Craig, that was so funny, but it doesn't actually exist?
Rumbler. Rumbler is an app that was a prank, kind of,
so
by a company that does stuff like this. They do like marketing anyway.
And it was like Tinder.
Yeah, like 70,000 people signed up for the beta in a little under a week, and it was the Tinder for fighting. So you would swipe right or swipe left if you wanted to fight someone.
Which, that sounds amazing.
No, and they had a little like screenshot of how the app would look and what it would seem like. And there was pro tips for how to get the fight ready if you both swiped right. And it said, make fun of the other person's face. Make sure to make fun of their face.
So see, okay, here's why I'm very torn on the, although it is fake, I'm very torn on the idea of this app. Here I am launching a documentary about online civility, and yet I do Krav Maga, so I'm really torn about where to fall on this app, because I
a little bit of you is tempted
because I like to fight.
Right, Krav Maga, somebody.
I go to class to fight strangers. It's way cheaper than therapy to go and clobber a stranger.
But you're mutually fighting.
You're mutually. Right. Well, but if you sign up for this app for fighting.
And if you both swipe right, you wanted to fight this person.
If this was a real app and I sign up and I'd be like, oh, look. Oh, snap. There's Esmeralda Leon. And you talk smack to me, and we have entered into an agreement. We have consented to fight.
Can we try to do that a little bit? Can you guys talk smack? Okay.
No, that's not a thing.
I was seeing if that was going to happen. You have to say stuff like,
"Fight her."
Your face is stupid, bro.
I would never say your face is stupid, bro.
You have to throw bro in.
Right.
The demo,
bro.
The demo of the app. Everyone said bro. By the way, so bro is key to that.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. I see fighting out in the world.
Yeah.
Because I usually, I leave here 2 a.m. I see fighting. It always includes the word bro.
Bro, almost all the time.
And this weird move, which I don't understand why is a thing. Because if I was going to fight somebody, I'm going to put some distance between me and the person I'm fighting.
You're shoving.
The shove. Yeah. I would like shove them. I would back up. Do something like that. But what I see is when one says the word bro, one does this chest bump, like you make contact with that person. Sometimes I have seen some of the dudes, like they get up on each other, come at me, bro, and they chest butt, and then they stand there, and it's like they talk to the side of each other's head, which is such a weird thing to do. Very weird.
That is amazing. You know, what's funny about the app, though, is that when I pitched it to you guys today, I forgot that there'd be a bunch of like legal risk that an app like that would take on
God.
For encouraging fighting.
Huge.
I would want something where you can then go somewhere where it was sanctioned to fight.
What do you mean? Like you
like a boxing ring or something.
Yeah, and then you go
well-lit
to a martial arts place.
Yeah, and then you
place
start, you set an appointment. Yeah. And you box.
With protective gear.
Exactly.
And all of those things.
I
sign up for that.
I love the idea of swiping right and then trash talking a human being you've never met before and then signing up really nicely.
Okay, well, that's
like
that's an interesting idea, though. You could get, we could make something that's like Tinder for sparring partners. So I could say, I am, 5'10", and mm-hmm. I don't even know what I weigh, but whatever I weigh.
Sure.
And I'm looking for, someone about my size to be my sparring partner.
Someone that likes high punches, not low punches.
Right. Someone who's especially gifted at the following moves or whatever. That would be interesting.
That sounds amazing.
I would do that.
Yeah. Someone who doesn't mind losing a fight in front of people that I think I want to impress.
Right. You need to be able to throw the fight once in a while if I'm trying to impress somebody.
Yeah, come on.
I'm going to make that Craigslist ad. It's going to be good.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited about that.
I cannot wait to see what weirdness applies for that ad.
Right. And
anyway.
We've had meetings before where Todd Manley mentions there's a marijuana social network, too. There's like a social network for medical marijuana that's out there now. I don't know what it's called.
I'm sure there is. There's a social network for everything.
Right.
There is a social network for everything. Yeah. But you know what? A lot of people are on the biggies, right? The Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat. And Snapchat's interesting right now because it just released some numbers that are humongous, really substantial numbers of video views that kind of are making Facebook sweat a little bit. I think a lot of times people sort of regarded Snapchat as something that kids just sort of like farted around with. No. They're getting some like major views and a lot of brands are suddenly kind of scrambling. There's a lot of brands on there already, but there's a lot of scramble in light of these numbers that were released. So that's kind of interesting. But the story this week that's kind of boggling my mind is just now our president has joined Facebook.
Seems a little late.
A little late. You're about to go.
Didn't he run with a lot of social media and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, he won that election, that first election, with completely data-driven. He really invested in some very smart people to run data for him, and it paid off. He really knew how to reach voters, especially young voters, and kind of work around voter apathy, which is the enemy of a lot of politicians. So, for someone who's so data driven and so very digital, I think it's kind of strange that he's on Facebook just now because he's been on Twitter for a long time. In fact, he holds a Twitter record. He does not do all the tweets himself, but when he does, he will initial it. So it'll say like B period O period at the end of the tweet. But in the last election, for his reelection, there was a Twitter record that he broke, and it was the number of likes and retweets under a certain amount of time. It was a picture of him and Michelle, once it was clear the election was his. So that has since been replaced by, I think, a picture of
Miley Cyrus.
Some celebrity doing some cray, but When, but for a while, he had that. He
when
had
Obama ringer. Tweets, do you think that there's a whole team still assembled that plans?
I hope. Okay. I mean, we hear about celebrities having kind of ghost tweeters and things like that. I mean, even Adele was in the headlines recently about how she admitted that she had done some drunk tweeting at some point, and it kind of got her in a little trouble, or it almost did, and so she now has kind of two people, two layers of handlers that tweets have to pass through before they go out. I would hate that. I mean, I like it when celebrities are accessible in that way. I mean, Ashton Kutcher is really big on social media and he does that himself and he speaks out about a lot of issues, but sometimes he's just kind of a regular person. And I think people have that expectation now that it's not just this untouchable celebrity, but that it's kind of this two-way conversation now. And some celebrities are really active. Like Will Wheaton is huge on Twitter, and he's always answering people and retweeting funny things, and he's, really, really active. So
I think the only exception to what you're saying is when you're drunk, though. Because even just a regular
that
person...
could ruin your...
Yeah. Even just an everyday person, not a famous celebrity person, I would love to have a drunk tweet handler for if I wanted to drunk message or drunk tweet anything. Like, no,
you're
Craig.
Like, that seemed like a good idea. Right. You wake up the next morning, you've tweeted like the pound sign four times and a bunch of numbers where you've passed out on your phone.
Come at me, bro.
Right. You invented the app. You just start picking fights with people on Twitter. I'd be like, well, Craig's drunk tweeting. Now, there is a thing you can put on Gmail called Google Goggles. Have you ever heard of this?
Yeah, this just came out recently, didn't it?
Well, it's been around a while because I used to have it on my Gmail because I wanted to try it, but it's actually extremely annoying. And what it does is if you attempt to send an email after a certain hour of the evening, a pop-up comes up and it makes you solve a math problem with a timer running down very fast. And if you do not do so, if you get the answer incorrect, it will not let you send. It will save it as a draft. Which is, if you're drunk and you're like, I am going to email that person that broke my heart years ago, that's a terrible idea. Don't do that. And that Google Goggles would save you. But if, you know, sometimes you're just working late.
Yeah.
And you're like
just tired.
Yeah. Like the first time it happened when I was like, oh, that's funny. I'm going to install this and see what it's like. The first time it happened, I had to answer an email from my boss at the time really quickly. And I was sitting there like, I need a calculator. I don't know. Long division in my head. I got to. And it was kind of annoying. And I started to sort of guess. And I got it wrong. And I was like, I'm not drunk. I'm just tired.
Well, and sometimes people have anxiety with like math and stuff. So
which I do.
Right. When you're completely sober, you might have more anxiety than when you were drunk. So you might actually be better at math drunk. So you might be able to solve the problem.
Hashtag math while drunk.
Right.
Maybe. No.
You're all relaxed and you're chill.
You're like, whatever. I have the square root. I know square roots, everything.
All those answers.
Times. Yep. That's a thing. But I think if you were in politics, you definitely, going back to our POTUS on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you definitely want some handlers because you make a misstep on social media and you can launch a war. So you got to be really careful about that, you know. But it'll be interesting because to me, him making a Facebook page right now in the game seems like he's planting seeds for whatever he's going to do next, which is really interesting. So his first post was about climate change and about protecting the earth. And it was a video and it was like, oh, I want other presidents. He's like walking around the White House grounds. He's like, I want other presidents to be able to walk in this nature and do all that stuff. So we'll see.
Does he like people's posts? Just like all the random posts that people do? How parents always like everything?
That would be awesome.
Do you know what
I'm
talking about?
Well, okay.
My parents do that. They're just like they like everything on your timeline.
I want just a bunch of food pictures from Obama. Just like all the stuff he's been eating recently. That would be great. No? No one else? Okay, I'm alone here. All right. No.
I didn't know that if he was such a foodie.
No, he's not.
He's
that's
not.
The point.
That's
it's
why
just,
he likes
just a bag of chips.
I was
just
making a social media joke. Social media jokes. That's where I'm
That's
going.
Your social media joke voice. There it is. Yeah. All right. We're taking a break. On that fine note, we're going to go to break. And we'll be right back in just a bit with more about social media. It'll be all good. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez this fine evening. Thanks for being with us. I'll be with you till 2 o'clock when I turn things over to our good friend Nick DiGilio. He's got a big show lined up for you, so you definitely want to stay around for that. You're up. You're caffeinated. Might as well stay up. It's all good. Hey, so... that happened.
Sorry, Amy. I don't know if you're trying to do your show right now, but...
You're getting good because that was mid-sentence. Tweet,
do it with your hands or your feet. Yeah.
I would have known, I would have brought a cane, a top hat.
You should have.
And sparkly outfit
something.
Of some sort.
Esmeralda, you're the kind of person that I would figure just has that.
Tails.
On stash all the time.
Well, it's in my house.
Right.
You have to let me know these things.
I don't just show up like that. Well, that lovely song that, again, thank you so much for creating that fine song for me. The plan tonight originally was I was going to be a guest on the show, and Patty and Craig were going to kidnap me.
Yeah, you're so close to your goal on Kickstarter that it we felt like maybe all you needed was a pretty late push.
Yeah.
And that pretty late push can come from a tweet-a-thon or a
that's what we're gonna do.
Text-a-thon or whatever it is.
So the plan tonight was that Patty was going to ask people to please back my Kickstarter. It's kickstarter.com and then just search my name, Amy Guth, G-U-T-H, for the documentary series that I'm working on about women and online harassment. I'm really close to my goal and I've got like 60 hours left to get there. So I'm super close. I just need a little bit of help to get there. And there's lots of perks for people. So she was going to have people back the thing and then tweet to her telling them that she had done so. And then she'd enter them into a drawing for Luminati's stuff.
Yep, exactly. Just let us know, either text us, call us, tweet us. Let us know somehow that you donated during the show and you were entered into a raffle to win. And we have had donations tonight, so we're just gonna give away a prize to one of those people after 1:30. So you still have time to get one in for the first prize. $25 gift card to Luminati's. Come on, people.
That's pretty sweet.
Yep.
Basically, we're buying you dinner.
Right.
See?
Basically, your donation is free if you win, because if you donate $25, you get $25.
Or, but if you want to give more than that,
I mean,
there's some cool perks.
Yeah. There's some great perks.
There's some real cool perks. There's some fun ones. I mean, for $10, I'll make you an origami crane, and I'm real good at doing that. So that's a thing. $35, though, I'll do a custom calligraphy, because I do calligraphy.
Ooh.
But I put swear words in the calligraphy because I love beautiful quotes, but sometimes they're kind of hokey.
Right.
So it becomes less hokey if you drop like a, you know, an F-bomb into
just
that.
Just quote Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can be inspirational and kind of tough and, you know, have a sailor mouth at the same time. So that's a thing that I do. So I will make a custom one for you for $35 to the Kickstarter campaign. That is a deal. Anyway, before the break and before that little Twitteruptions.
Got a little Twitteruption.
We were talking about social media, so it works in. It works out. And we were talking about how the president has joined Facebook and that kind of thing. But let us talk about Twitter again a little more on a different note of Twitter, though. And that is we're having a lot of trouble with selfies, my friends. I'm pro-selfie. I really am. There's too many people in the world that believe they are ugly and don't want to take up space. And I think especially for women, we're kind of taught to be, you know, not bragging, but we're taught to be kind of downplay our looks or put ourselves down. Even when you get a compliment like, oh, those are such cute pants. Oh, well, they barely even fit me. That's just a thing we do. And instead of just like, thank you, I love these pants or whatever. So I'm pro selfie. Anything, if you're going to take up space and, you know, put yourself out there. I think especially for parents, a lot of times the parents are the ones taking the pictures of the kid. And so I know in my family, I have a ton of pictures of my dad. I don't have that many with my mom because she was always taking the picture. So I think especially for moms, it's the selfie has made a whole archive of photos available to kids years down the road. You're going to have pictures of your mom when a lot of people did not. So I'm pro selfie. I'm anti-stupid, though, is the thing about me. So lots of people are making...
That's weird because I'm very pro-stupid.
Some people are, man. Some people are, and they let you know every single chance they get. So there's some people that are having so much trouble, excuse me, with selfies that there's starting to be laws around them. For example, our friends in Russia have been making some laws and putting out official advisories about what you can and cannot do in a selfie because so many people cannot get it right. This is the land of the dash cam. These people have been documenting things for a while. Selfies not working out. And I think part of it is because we live in an extreme time and I think a lot of people want to one up each other and push the limits of things. And so as a result, people are getting seriously injured while taking selfies. So now in Russia, you may no longer take a selfie with an AK-47 because some people can't handle that.
Right.
That's a thing that's gotten some people shot by their own hand. You cannot take a selfie with many wild animals because apparently it infuriates tigers when you grab them and hug them and take a selfie with them. Again,
confusing. Yeah, good. Good that we're getting this
That's
all out
good
there.
That we're getting out there. Yeah. I feel like it's one of those things. Sometimes that like the boundaries of stupid are so appalling. Like those, you know, those like, I don't know what they're called. Like the reflector things you put in your car windshield to fold up. You know how you get them in giveaway bags of like if you run a 5K, you get a goodie bag. Sometimes they have them in there. I got one at an event. And the first thing on it, it said, remove before driving. Like, oh.
Oh, because you couldn't see then.
And here's the thing. Sense. For that to be there, someone had to do that.
Do you know that Pop-Tarts have instructions?
Open bag and eat Pop-Tart?
Open bag, insert toaster, toast, eat.
Well.
They're the best directions ever. I didn't know all those steps were involved in Pop-Tarts.
Someone screwed it up.
Right.
Somebody messed it up, and so you got to put those kind of warnings on
there. Do I toast my hand? What do I do here? I don't know.
Where do I put this? I don't know what to do. So yeah. So the selfie things are an issue, but the laws around selfies to protect us from our own stupidity have now come over here to our country.
Right.
So earlier this month, the New York City Police Department responded to a Kentucky tourist who had climbed the Brooklyn Bridge to take a selfie. No good's going to come out of that. I mean, I'm all for challenge yourself, have adventures, do your stuff. I would not climb the Brooklyn Bridge. That's got bad idea written all over it. Also, Disney theme parks have banned selfie sticks because they feel like there's a safety concern after a selfie artist prompted a roller coaster to be shut down mid-ride because they had like a selfie stick up in the air and it got out of control and it was all bad.
How thrilled is the person in that story for being called a selfie artist? How thrilling is that title? Yeah, I'm a selfie artist for sure.
Selfie artist, right? I don't know that.
Don't most roller coasters already have that thing where they take the picture?
Yeah. But
so
I,
why do it yourself?
Yeah, but you don't know when that's coming, Esmeralda. It's going to come
you
in the big
drop. You can
pose
for it.
Yeah. Unless you've done the roller coaster before, you don't know when it's coming.
Also, I don't know about you, but I would scream and let go of the selfie stick and probably clobber somebody with it. Because, I can't be focused on holding a delicate little selfie stick and making a pretty face and like looking cute while I was flying. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. Thanks for being with us this fine evening. My friends, so Craig, you have many times this evening, because you wrote a beautiful song earlier today that you have played many times tonight, you have been talking about a project that I'm doing.
Yeah, you're doing a project.
But you are also doing a project that I would like to talk about your project because it's very
stop.
Cool. No, it's a cool one.
Well,
I love
you.
This.
Yeah, I do a podcast on WGNplus.com. It's our digital incubator for a bunch of other material that we don't put on WGN Radio, but that you can still enjoy.
Well, there's only so many hours in the day.
Amen.
You know?
Right. And the internet, it's a thing. And it like people do stuff on the internet. They
unlimited amount
audio.
Of space.
Right. So it's called You've Binge Challenged. It's
binged.
Kind of a weird name. Binge. Yeah. And what it means is that each week someone challenges me to binge watch a TV series that they really like.
I love that so much.
Yeah. And so, well, because it's really popular. I guess 8 out of 10 people have binge watched something in the last 12 months. I read that somewhere. I don't know if that's true. A lot of statistics are made
true.
Up on the spot. So
yeah. 9 out of 10 statistics are
made up
right
away. Yep. Uh-huh.
Well, I challenge you.
Oh, yeah. Let's do a challenge right now.
To watch a show.
Okay.
Gosh, there's so many, though.
Mm-hmm. I know you're going to throw me a curveball. I thought I knew what show it was going to be.
I'm going to say The Inbetweeners.
Okay, cool.
It is a very funny British show.
Ooh.
About four teenage boys who are so awkward.
No one has challenged me to anything across the pond yet.
Okay.
It's all been
American
stuff.
I laughed so hard watching that show that I had to hit pause because I was crying with laughter. I could not breathe. That show is so funny. It is raunchy.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Funny.
Yeah.
It's four teenage boys that really
Perfect.
Just are trying to, you know, figure it out, be teenage boys. It's kind of growing up stuff and figuring out what are we doing after high school? What's
wow.
your plan? What's your plan? But trying to get the ladies along the way.
Ooh.
And then
like
there's like the hot stepmom that someone's after.
Perfect.
And they endlessly torment the one kid about his very good looking stepmom. And then there's, you know, just all these issues. It is so, so funny. I think there's 2 or 3 seasons.
That sounds, I should preface this or warn you just a little bit that I'm not exactly a TV expert. I thought of this idea because I thought it was a cool idea, but I haven't.
It's a great
seen,
idea.
Yeah. I haven't seen a whole lot of television, so my criticisms are not always the most insightful.
You're like, you're like comparing it to the one show you've seen.
Yep. I compare it to the cartoon show that I was watching the
you
day before.
You take like the over under on better than, worse than, say, Gilligan.
So these characters remind me of Bugs Bunny in a certain way. I know it's going to be obscure, but we'll get there.
Don't worry.
I think
you'll like this one. And then there's a spinoff. One of the characters who is, I think, the most reasonable and sympathetic character of the four boys.
Perfect.
He is in a show called Friday Night Dinner that is similarly hilarious.
Yeah, it's interesting because once you become a really big fan of something, all the people that I've interviewed, they've picked a show that they were really big fans of when they were children.
Uh-huh.
So it's like The Wonder Years, Home Improvement. Oh. There's a bunch of stuff that's already out there. And they follow the characters.
Yeah.
Once you really fall in love with a show, you want to know what all those actors do for the rest of their careers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know what? When I had watched all the Inbetweeners and then all the Friday Night Dinner episodes, I found myself really missing those characters. I really did. I was like, that mom was so funny,
right?
And this kid was so funny. You kind of miss them, and you miss the, you know, checking in with them and all.
Yeah. No, and it's been great for me to watch a lot of these shows.
What are you binge watching right now?
This week I'm binge watching MASH for Chris Duffy.
That's a great show.
It is. It's a really, I can't watch all of it though. Like I do a podcast every single week, and that probably was a mistake in all this because it takes a lot of time to watch television. You can't just sit in front of the TV for,
well, you'll
15
build
hours,
up.
20 hours. Yeah, right.
You know, you'll get a few in the can and,
yeah,
you know, have them
right
ready to roll.
But so I probably only see like a season or two of the show, but I'm jumping all over the place with MASH so that I get a good barometer.
Yeah. MASH is a great show. Mm-hmm. That is a great show. Yeah. And then what else have you featured?
Home Improvement is the most recent podcast out. Mike Jacobson, a sports guy here, binge challenged me to watch that.
That's a good one.
Gossip Girl, Elif, is a producer here. She challenged me to watch that. That's out there.
I've never seen that show, but lots of people love that show.
Hannah Stanley challenged me to watch Ed. And then Brian Noonan, this is a few weeks ago, challenged me to watch Deadwood. So there's a bunch of podcasts on WGNplus.com. Thank you, Amy, for letting me mention all this.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's such a fun idea.
Yeah.
I love podcast formats where people trade information. I love anything where people trade information. I think I had this idea a long time ago for kind of a review, not a review site, but a feature in which you would take, say, a sports fan who knew nothing about, say, the opera, and an opera fan who knew nothing about sports, and you'd make them go to each other's thing and then both write the reviews, because I think you would get some... It would work to your advantage that you didn't know a lot about that world. You know, I mean, I think a sports fan would write a very different opera review than the opera lover would, and vice versa. So I think that would be interesting to read those. Some of them would be hilarious and tragic, and some of them would be insightful, I think, because there's things, if you're really immersed in something, kind of sometimes you miss the forest for the trees.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That is exactly what I'm doing, too, because I'm not exactly familiar with all these shows or a lot of this stuff. So it's been a really fun experience. And I've lost a lot of days of my life already to watching television.
So there's a show that I'm watching right now that has a terribly boring title, but that is so good. I cannot stop. It is called Ms. Fisher's Murder Mysteries. And that right away sounds like snooze button. It sounds like it's like Ms. Marple, right? Like not exciting. It is fantastic. It is this woman. First of all, I love it because she's glamorous and self-assured and awesome. And she's over 40, which is great. I hate it when, like, you have to be 20 to have fun in a show.
Even the tagline for this show makes it sound a little like you said. It's Private Detective Fisher Solves Mysteries in 1920s Melbourne.
Yes.
That doesn't sound captivating.
It does
per
not
se.
Sound yeah. captivating. I'm right. And that kept popping up in my Netflix. I was like, I don't want to watch that boring crap. That looks so ridiculous. And then I finally watched one and I was like, oh my God, this show is phenomenal. And I watched the whole season in almost one sitting. It is so good. So this woman is a detective and has this beautiful kind of flapper-esque wardrobe because it's like 1928 or so, set in Australia. But she tackles really big social issues, huge, and a lot of women's issues. It's a very feminist show. She has her best friend is a doctor, not probably a lot of female doctors in the 20s. They've tackled like domestic violence, they've tackled abortion, they've tackled, you know, women's rights, they've tackled all these big issues, even kind of social norms at the time, because there's one about race car driving, and there's this whole thing about women can't be drivers, blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing. Oh, what was that woman doing out unescorted? And so there's a lot of social conventions of the time that are confronted. I think it's fascinating. And
it actually sounds amazing.
It's beautifully done.
Yeah.
It's so good. But you have to talk people into watching it, because I've recommended the show to a lot of women. They're like, are you sure? They'll email it to me later and go, is this the show? Because this looks really dull. And then I'm like, just watch one.
And you also said that the lead character is like a James Bond-esque character a little bit.
Totally. She speaks all these different languages. early in every episode, a good-looking man pops up and she will have an evening with him by the time the episode is done. So she's very, like, in, you know, possession of her own sexuality and she owns it. She has, like, a kind of a personal assistant housekeeper type of young woman that she takes in who's very, very conservative and very, very shy. And she's kind of, this young woman's very scandalized by, you know, the very first time we see her, she walks into Franny Fisher's house and she's hungover. She's just said good morning and goodbye to a man who stayed the night and her, you know, stockings and shoes and bra are kind of everywhere. And she's had this really kind of wild night. And this poor girl is really kind of scandalized by what she's seeing. And she's thinking I can help her. But in fact, they kind of help each other. You know, one grounds the other, one brings the other out of the shell. So it is marvelous.
I'm seriously going to watch the show when I get home.
It's really good.
Mash.
Yeah.
Show sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's really good. It's phenomenally good. And then there's like the lead detective. And so there's always a tension with her and him because we always think they're going to hook up. I'm sure they will eventually. By the time I get through all the seasons, they'll have to. It's just too much. It's like Friends. Like everyone knew they had to get together by the end. It'll be like that. Anyway, we're going to take a little break and we're going to come back in just a bit. 720 WGN.
No snow. No, we didn't get to it. We thought we had time, but we blew it.
I never get tired of that song.
Yeah, Jason Skaggs is a mastermind.
He really is.
So good at stuff.
Let's not kid ourselves. Yeah. That guy is a genius.
I would genuinely go to a concert that he was having. I would actually go.
And he could make it all up on the spot, and it would still be flipping awesome.
Yeah.
That's the thing about him.
Yeah, the intro he made for us for the Twitter night tonight, it took him like 3 minutes to do that. He's just like, I got an idea.
It is endlessly delightful, and I'm going to use that on my show all the time for anything. I'm going to be like, we're going to have a Twitter-thon about whatever the heck you want. Just tweet. Just tweet, because I need to play this song. That's going to be a thing. Get ready for that. Get excited. All right, well, it is the stuff we didn't get to. We're keeping the Patty Vasquez tradition alive.
What we meant to get to.
Well, I did not get to talk about the parachute instructor that, to demonstrate the importance of packing a backup parachute, shot her parachute. She jumped out of a plane, got her parachute going, pulled out a flare gun, shot it, set it on fire, just to let people know that you should pack a backup, and then pulled out the backup. What?
Yeah, that's, you were showing me that video before the show. That's an intense way to demonstrate that.
You could just tell me, right. I'm not going to play around with my safety in the middle of the air, flying at the earth. No way. I will do whatever the heck they say. You don't need to say anything on fire, man.
Plus, by the way, and I don't know, 312-981-7200, if there's a professional parachuter listening right now, but I think when you deploy the backup chute, it disconnects the main chute. So she did not have to blow it up. She could have just deployed the other chute, and it would have all worked the same.
Needless,
ridiculous mayhem.
Like parachute arson is what she committed.
Yeah, right.
So that was a thing that happened.
That was awesome.
We also did not get to talk about the bizarre Airbnb thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an interesting topic, because as we move into this kind of gig economy, the trust economy, right? The kind of consumer-to-consumer thing that we have going on with a lot of things like Airbnb, issues come up that I think no one kind of really thought through until they show up. You know, previously, we just kind of look at someone's, like what it says about them on Yelp. Or if you're buying from them on eBay, we kind of look, are they an okay seller? They have a good rating. It's fine. They're reliable. But now, as we're using Airbnb and we're going to sleep in strangers' houses while we're on vacation, things like that, you know, what happens if you're, say, like in a house that's full of dangerous things? And that's come up because, unfortunately, there's a story recently where a guy died. He sat on a porch swing kind of thing that was kind of attached partly to a tree. The branch fell and it killed him. Whose fault is that? Is that the homeowner's fault? Is that Airbnb's fault? I mean, someone's got to have the liability there, and that's unclear. You know, there's all these stories. There was a story about someone who was in Spain and was kidnapped by their Airbnb host and held hostage and sexually assaulted and all these horrible things. So that's a thing.
Right. Well, there was that video, too, about the Uber. And this is not exactly the same as what you just said. But the Uber driver who was assaulted by a passenger when he tried to throw him out of the
Because the guy had been drinking.
The guy was drunk
and
couldn't give directions. And so the Uber driver pulls over and says, I'm kicking you out. And he just started punching him in the face.
Right.
Because there is no company really protecting these people. I know they work for Uber, but it's very much person to person.
Because what you're looking at is, do I want to pick this person up? Yes, they have a good score. They're reputable. Fine. Mm-hmm. okay, well, then, you know, enter alcohol or drugs or something, and people can sometimes act very differently.
Right.
So yeah. I think it'll be interesting. I think we'll see a lot of, I don't know if it'll be, if it's more regulations or just change the way we do it. I don't know. But I mean, it's interesting.
If you did Airbnb, if you actually put your place up for that, would you want to be home or not be home?
Probably not be home.
Yeah, right? I feel like that's the, but does Airbnb give you any sort of, if they trash your house, will pay for it?
I don't know. I mean, I know, I follow somebody on Twitter who recently had some guests in her guest room. So she was home and she was endlessly annoyed. She made it really clear that she had pets and they were mean to her pets and complained about them. She has a child and they were complaining about that. And they were also really noisy, keeping the kid awake. And it's a very small child. So they were, you know, they like flooded her toilet or shower or something and used all the hot water. I think she was really not happy about that. But then you hear of things about, like, there was a couple that went to Burning Man and left a house sitter in charge of their house who then put it on Airbnb and made money. I think the guy made like $2,000 or something off of their house, but they came back and it was trash by not that guy, by someone else.
Holy God. Ugh. There was also a story, this is like a year old in California, where someone did an Airbnb and then just squatted in the house for like 5 months. I'm just like, I
nope.
own this now.
Nope, I'm staying.
Yeah. Paid for a couple nights. I'm going to be around for a while, though, guys.
But I pretty much have the key, and you're not getting it back. So, right. Sweet place. Thanks
so much. Yeah. There was a story out of Florida where a cop was awarded with making the most DUI arrests for Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
That's great.
And he showed up to the event to accept his award way too wasted.
Come on.
How does that happen? This is out of Florida, though.
So. Think it through, bro.
Right.
Think it through.
You know, I get it that you're celebrating. This is a bad time for that. There's an owner of a water park that's foreclosed that chained himself to the slide. He's not going quietly.
What's your plan, guy?
It's going to get cold, bro.
Also, it's water.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to, someone will turn the water on and drown you.
It's like, I don't
bad
know if
things
it's
will happen
yeah, right.
with this plan of yours.
It would be awesome to live at a water park, though.
No.
I have thought about that before, just
not.
Constantly. You know, why?
No.
Because the slides are so much fun.
You get prune
Every
hands.
Day.
Prune hands. Constant prune hands.
No, but.
Dry, waterlogged skin. I could not.
Like
hang.
Alone at a water park, though? Like totally.
Oh, if you had it
yourself.
To yourself.
Right.
But then it'd get boring. The familiar, you know, you would get over familiar with the water park. You'd be like, I am sick of this slide. You would lose. The joy of the water park.
You need to up the ante every so often.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you get...
Then you just
Then you
die.
Do weird stuff like chain yourself to a thing in a water park.
I like his enthusiasm, though. I'm
I like
going,
his enthusiasm.
You know, yeah.
I suppose. I think every... I suppose every cause needs an activist, even
right.
water parks.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. And
Some
foreclosures.
People...
I don't know what he's standing up against. Something. He's against something,
something.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. There's the stuff we did not get to. All right, we're going to take a little quick break and get you to news. We'll be back in just a bit. 720 WGN.